the Swami Auto of Sarasvati. Adana is originally from British Guiana and is of Mongolian ancestry on his father's side, Indian and Spanish descent on his mother's side. He and his wife, Margaret, have founded and operate a very beautiful ashram in Tyler, Texas. Tyler is known as the rose capital of the world, for those of you who are not familiar. It's a non-denominational organization. After a period of very rigorous study and meditation and training, Adana began his ministry roughly about 1964. And he is here this week to conduct four lectures at 2 and 8 today and tomorrow at this church. And then on Monday night, for those who feel the need to go further with him, you're welcome to come to my house, 13 West Ham Parkway, Monday. The four lectures that he'll give today and tomorrow have continuity, and they are on the consciousness of man. The lecture today is the origin. Tonight will be the involvement. Tomorrow at 2 o'clock will be the emergence, and tomorrow night the final formal lecture will be the science of the soul. And it's my great, great pleasure to meet you, Donnelly.
Thank you, Shelley. Those who don't know, this is not a lecture for Swamis. We call this satsang. Satsanga means fellowship of truth. And before we can start, there are three things occurring at the satsanga. One, we have a physical contact. Two, a mental. Three, an extrasensory. So let us calibrate the mind. Consciousness of man. This is very difficult to describe to most people because man asks himself, what is his origin? And unless you know your origin, you really don't understand why you have consciousness. In the Eastern scriptures or the Judeo-Christian scriptures, it tells us that man's origin began in creating or being a creation of the Creator. But most of us don't even know what the Creator is, let alone look upon ourselves as a creation. But if we look into all the scriptures, we find that it states God made man in his own image and likeness, male and female created him. And God breathed into man the breath of life, and man became a living soul. While we have our origin in that statement, man is a living soul. It does not say that man has a soul. It states that man is a living soul. Now, for us to understand living soul, we have to understand the levels of creation. And the levels of creation involve consciousness. We know it in our scriptural languages, heaven, hell, different levels of purgatory, limbo, and so forth. These are only names that we have ascribed to certain levels of creation. And Jesus refers to them as many mansions. In my Father's house there are many mansions, symbolically speaking. But being made in the image of God and the likeness of God, these are two things. Image, likeness. The image of God is conscious energy. Energy. You know it in the form of atoms. The likeness of God is intelligence, the all-pervading, omnidirectional awareness. The two in unity, via the breath process, brings forth soul. You look upon it and you call it man. Yet the English word man comes from the Sanskrit word manas, man as. In Sanskrit, manas means organized thinking or mind. Man as he is a thinking organism. Therefore, as we look at ourselves, we are thinking organisms. Then the scripture comes back and tells us, as a man think in his heart, that is what he is. We find ourselves returning to the origin of our nature. But we can't understand this origin until we understand the levels of creation, how we come to be in this mechanism. We had a blackboard, did you have a blackboard?
No.
All right. Try to go without the blackboard. The very first level of consciousness or expression of the Creator, at its lowest manifestation, can't go any further than that. It's called matter. This is it, right around you, solid substance, matter. This matter is conscious energy. It took Einstein to convince us that matter around us is energy. Now, matter is held in a state by some intelligence working upon it. In your scriptures, we refer to that state as hell, H-E-L-L, as if it's something bad. But in reality, it's H-E-L-D. Consciousness is held in a state of suspension called matter, the very first expression of being. And since we are an expression of that being, we are held in that state. So we don't go to a place when we pass on called H-E-L-L. We are already in that state called H-E-L-D. Omar Khayyam was very wise, and he made us aware of the fact. He said, I sent the soul out into the invisible, a letter of the afterlife to spell. By and by, the soul came back and said, I myself am heaven and hell. This removes the illusion or the fear of some remote region in time and space as a dungeon for unwanted souls. If we are an expression of the Creator, then why would the creative intelligence doom us into extinction or exile us into some area to be tormented or punished? It's because we don't comprehend the terms that are being used in relation to the soul. Man is soul. He doesn't have a soul. But because he is soul, he is involved with levels of expressions or creations. These levels are to be realized or mastered. Once we've mastered them, we return back to the source. The source we came from is creative intelligence, or pure being. The state we're in is matter. Now, this first level is called matter acting on matter. That's the first level we're in. But it's the last level down from the creator. It's the first level of self-recognition, but the last level of total manifestation. As we see ourselves here, we are the last expression of the creator, matter. As we look upon ourselves and try to realize it, it's the first thing we can realize. Using the mind to realize our existence, this is what they call self-realization. It's not God-realization yet. Self-realization is not God-realization. Self-realization is relating to what you are. God-realization is relating how you became what you are. What you are now is matter acting on matter. You perceive this through the senses. Therefore, we are in this state. We are held in this state. And this state creates torment because of the frustrations that are involved in it. The friction between two material forces acting upon themselves. We pit ourselves against another physical substance. It creates a sensation. That sensation, we perceive it in terms of pain or pleasure. Our consciousness reacts. Therefore, we try to run away from this level by trying to ascend to another level. There's no other level below matter to go to. You are already in the state of matter. You're held in this state. So where would you go down? But you can't go any further than that. It's here we are right now, in the state of matter. We have to transcend matter or rise above matter on our journey back to the source, which is the creative intelligence. So the first level up now, from matter acting on matter, or perception through contact with matter, is energy acting on matter. Scientists has now opened the doors for us to recognize energy. Centuries ago, we were only aware of solid matter. We were not aware of the properties of matter. We could not relate in terms of properties of matter. Any attempt to relate to the properties of matter by a few individuals, they were called crazy crackpots. Any attempt to write it down, they had to use symbols to avoid ostracism, let alone being strung up by the ignorant mind that was embedded or enmeshed in the structure of matter. No one could perceive, centuries ago, the properties of matter. As we become aware that matter contains certain properties, and that these properties are no longer in the range of the five senses, they threaten our existence until we are intelligent enough to harness it. When Benjamin Franklin discovered that the kite in the air and sending a key up the kite string, sparks begin to go off, and electrical power is there. At that time, no one could harness it, but the phenomenon existed long before Franklin came along to prove it or demonstrate it. But because it was recognizable, it was also a threat. And once it becomes a threat, those who don't understand will destroy the person who presents the truth to them. But as we gain understanding, that is what we call cognition to some degree, we begin to cognize these forces, that energy is acting on matter, then the world mind or the group mind is suddenly expanded. It takes the individual mind of matter acting on matter to raise other group minds by first presenting certain facts about the environment. And as these facts are presented, then the group mind is raised. And as we apply it, the group mind then moves toward a higher state of awareness. But it's always an individual who moves the group mind. We are involved with this. We don't recognize it until we are hit by it and versus. So the second level up in man's unfoldment back to the source is energy acting on matter. That is the state of cognition in you. Now, the third level up, very few of us can employ energy acting on matter. Some of us did not know how to employ it. For instance, we have a few examples of those who were able to employ energy acting on matter. We take some type of force, like water, and let it hit a water wheel. And as it hits the water wheel and turns, then some energy is released to move other objects. We take the wind and let it turn a windmill, and we have another form of energy occurring. These are gradual indications of how energy is acting. Then as we get more and more sophisticated, we start breaking down the substance itself and discharging the energy out of it in terms of heat, and harnessing that heat now to drive other equipment, like a steam engine, powerhouses, and generators, and so forth. We have that type of unfoldment. Consciousness is growing in man. But that doesn't take him back to his sources yet. This is his unfoldment. This is what he's transcending. Now, the next level he has to move to is consciousness acting on matter. This we see when people pray. They pray in consciousness, they send out thoughts or ideas. And the idea crystallizes around that desire that they're praying. And then that desire is suddenly experienced. Well, for example, a person has broken a bone or has a disease of the heart or lungs, kidney, gallbladder, and you can pray for that person. Now, yeah, lung or the heart or the bone is a solid substance, it's matter, as far as the mind would accept. Prayer is an ideational communication, and that's consciousness. And you're sending it out into time and space, and you're looking for a result by the sustained repetition of the prayer. You have no guarantee that some intelligent force responded. You only assume it responded when the action corrects itself in the person. And you give thanks. In reality, nothing is wrong with your assumption. In fact, your assumption is genuine that some force went into work or went to manifest itself. But the confidence in that force has to be built up, and the reality of how this force operates has to be understood. And then the avoidance of a fanatism must take place within you, otherwise you become egotistical and think you can change and alter every condition in the world by simply praying for it. There are many subtle forces at work in consciousness, acting on matter. The mere idea that you can pray and correct this condition, does that say that you are the sole doer of the action? You are the channel through of directing some degree of consciousness to exert its influence on matter. Because you are soul, you carry this potential quality in yourself. It is the divine intelligence personalized in you. that you're able to generate this devotion or attitude. Now, as you generate it and see it occurring, you pray and the prayer is answered. And you realize it's answered. That is exactly consciousness acting on matter. Now, consciousness acting on matter takes place in time and space. It can be instantaneous. It can be at a distance. Or it can take a prolonged time to occur. But nevertheless, it is your concentrated consciousness exerting an influence on substance or matter to bring about a change. Many of us have done this knowingly or unknowingly. And that is our third level of consciousness and our origin involved in it. Now comes the next level. Many of us don't get past this level now. We just remain there and act out our lives, capable of monitoring matter in some way by consciousness. Some of us can actually, by telekinesis, that is, focus the consciousness to shift material object into space. These are all levels of the consciousness acting on matter. The fourth level is energy acting on energy. Here the scientist doesn't go any further because he doesn't know how energy can act upon itself or reconcile itself. They're in the process of discovering or working on that. They're dealing with a very subtle power, energy acting upon itself. At that level, the saint or the realized man enters what is called rejuvenation. His body is a mass of energy, and it is monitoring itself by its own internal mechanics. So he's living on direct energy. Normally, we live by indirect forms of energy, by eating solids, liquids, breaking it down into a form of energy to sustain the body. When we enter that state of energy acting on energy, we are now altering the mechanism and teaching it to survive directly on pure energy. This would confirm what Jesus meant when he said, "It is written that man does not live by bread alone." That is, since man is soul, he does not subside or sustain himself by solids and liquids, that's bread, in a solid form of energy alone. That means he does not rely on the indirect form of energy, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Word is vibration. Vibration is in an energy ratio, an energy movement. The human mechanism is sustained by vibrations constantly passing through it, all around it, as energy. The various levels of energy in which the mechanism can absorb and work and function would indicate that soul is now coming up to its fourth level of awareness. One of the other symptoms of that state is the fatigueless state. Being capable of working in the environment in a state of non-fatigue and minimizing the intake of substance and gradually to where there is no need for substance. This is evidence of the soul's ability. Since we are soul, our origin tells us that we must prove these qualities to ourselves sooner or later. And we find ourselves evolving to a point every day feeling no need for food, minimum amount of food, minimum amount of tiredness, more activity in ourselves. How come this sudden change in a progressive society happening to individuals who are not aware of it being a spiritual principle. Suddenly, you don't follow any religious belief, but then you find yourself not craving to eat large meals in the day. Then you discover you don't have the need for much sleep at night. Then you discover that you seem to have abundant energy, vitality, more zest for existing and working. Where does it come from? It simply doesn't come just by imagining. There are certain changes occurring already within our nature because we are unfolding as soul. More and more as we understand, we unfold. Now, in this state, you are working with knowledge for the first time. The very first level, you are working with perception, which is matter acting on matter. The second level, you're working with cognition, that is energy acting on matter. The third level, you're working with intellect, that is consciousness acting on matter. Now, the fourth level is energy acting on energy. You're working now with knowledge. It is written that man does not live by bread alone. It's a known knowledge, a known science of how the body can function independent of solids and liquids. A gradual state of soul's unfoldment. Man is soul. He doesn't have a soul. When he labors under the illusion he has a soul, then he goes through the various levels of confusion and never find the source back, because he will not know how to differentiate between the sensory life or the elusive life and the real life, which is the intuitive life. The next level up the soul travel is consciousness acting on energy. Here now man is working with reason. Consciousness acting on energy. He is using reason, experimentation. Consciousness acting on energy. He can take electrical power, work with his consciousness and direct it. He can take forms of energy and direct it to consciousness by experimentation and reason. Harness it to his own needs. Also, he can go into the extrasensory nature by bringing his consciousness to vibrate now and perform what is called psychic surgery. Psychic surgery is actually passing the hand through the tissue of the body, separating it, taking out the diseased part, closing up the wound and leaving no scar. It's consciousness acting on energy. Healing the blind with insignificant substances like spit and sand, as Jesus did when he spit on the ground, rubbed it up with his feet, took it and put it in the man's eye. And then also raising the dead. All these different aspects occur in consciousness acting on energy. The experimentation of consciousness and the divine reason occurs in that level. The soul is unfolding. But that doesn't make the soul in that state liberated as yet. The soul is still subject to time and space. Because the soul is subject to time and space at that level, it's not liberated. It's not free. Jesus said, as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become sons of God. Also he said, seek the truth. Truth will make you free. Free men all, Lord of yourself. The Eastern scriptures say, man must be freed while living, not while dead. He must attain jivanmukta, or freedom while living. He must attain this higher state of freedom. Freed from the sensory pull. Free from the time-space relationship. This is the freedom they are talking about. Now, it's the next level up, the freedom occurs.
where consciousness is acting on consciousness. You call it the Christ self or the intuitive awareness. Consciousness acting on consciousness. It's the teacher self, the God self, or Christ self, not the supreme God self, but it's the Christ self, the intuitive self. It's the guru self or master self. It's that state where the consciousness is directing consciousness. The soul has now entered a level in which the creator is personalized. In the Hebrew writings, they call it Emmanuel, God in man. The intuitive level is the God in man relationship. The consciousness permeating the physical being, acting through that level. In pure consciousness, acting on consciousness, there is no error. There in that state, you are free for the first time. Free man all, Lord of the self. Now that is self-realization right up to there. You have arrived at total self-realization where consciousness is acting on consciousness or the intuitive self or Christ self. Now, Jesus made a statement. He says, you see me, you see the Father. Now, it begins to become God-realization from there on up. The self-realization is a stepping stone into God-realization. Seeing the Christ is seeing the God self. It's the next step up. We enter now what is called beingness acting on consciousness. In that state, it's the divine wisdom, the creative intelligence, our Holy Spirit. That particular level of being that holds us as one with the Spirit or the Father. We are held in that state together with the Father. In that state, we inwardly hear the divine current resounding in ourselves. It's called the Holy Comforter. It's comforting to you because it transcends every other level of being to hold you in the luminosity of consciousness. When it occurs in there, there is wisdom for the first time, a luminous type of wisdom, a radiant type of wisdom. Your whole being begins to glow with it. Every taint or every action that was once left over is all cleared out. Even when you got to the Christ state, it's all cleared out. Now in that state, you're pure and luminous. This is what they call ascension. You understand it as ascension. Jesus told his disciple when she tried to touch him, touch me not, I have not yet ascended unto the Father. Her negative force field coming in contact with his positive force field would have short circuit and instantly kill her. He had to wait until these conscious levels were settled, established, and cured before he could allow even his own disciples to touch him. When he came back to them in the upper chamber, he did not refuse to let them touch him because he had already made the transition in consciousness. Then the final transition was to appear in front of them and ascend into this ascended state of beingness acting on consciousness, giving them the confirmation that their reality as soul is a valid experience for them whenever they make the ascension. That's why he says, I go unto the Father, but I send you the Holy Comforter who will remind you of all these things in my name. And in my Father's house there are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. If it were not so, I would tell you. If these levels were not actually there in levels of beingness, then a master who is working from consciousness, acting on consciousness, could not tell us that this is the way back to the source. A master is an individual who has mastered each level back to the source. He's not an individual who pulls you by the nose and tells you, come along, I'm going to take you there like a cow with a ring in his nose. A master is that individual who has mastered the levels in order to take you back to the source. He is the wayfarer. That's why he calls himself, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the light. He shows you how to walk backwards into consciousness. From the level of matter acting on matter, right back up to the last state now, beingness acting on beingness. Supreme intelligence, supreme creative intelligence. Now, it is said that Jesus ascended on the third day and unto the Father, and he sat on the right hand of the Father. Isn't that what it says? Are you familiar with that statement? He sat on the right hand of the Father? Ask yourself, if the Father is the omnipresent creative intelligence, does he have a right hand and a left hand? Symbolically speaking, what is he saying? The right hand of the Father is beingness. The left hand of the Father is consciousness. And the Christ is that state of consciousness acting on consciousness. This state of intuitive development that the Master Jesus passed through, now he must go to the next level where he goes into beingness. Beingness is superior than consciousness. So consciousness was a level in which he had control of, consciousness acting on consciousness. Now he's going to beingness acting on consciousness. So beingness is positive, consciousness is negative at the seventh level up. So he ascended on the right and sat on the right hand, meaning from consciousness he went to beingness, working upon consciousness. In that state he was in total ascension. Now, no one becomes the creator. No one becomes God. Everyone becomes God realized. So even Master Jesus is saying he's sitting on the right hand of the Father. He didn't say he became the Father. He said, if you see me, you see the Father. If you can reach consciousness acting on consciousness, it is possible for you to experience some degree of beingness. But from that level, you have to transcend it to beingness. But when you enter that beingness state, you are like saying sitting on the right hand on a positive charge of the divine intelligence. And the consciousness is a negative charge of the divine intelligence. The Father itself is the creative intelligence that has become us all. Even Master Jesus and all the great truth seekers, all the great teachers of truth. This creative intelligence has become us all. There in that state, pure beingness is total love, total compassion, total mercy. It's devoid of all form. But it cannot communicate to its creation, which is soul, on an intimate level, unless there is some form. Beingness cannot communicate to anything unless there's a form. In pure beingness, if there is no form to communicate with, there is no communication. Because it's total, infinite love, total, unconditional love, total, unconditional grace. To whom will it communicate? It needs consciousness to communicate with, because it's beingness. So the only level that man as a being can aspire to is beingness acting on consciousness. Therefore the scripture says we become individuals who have dominion over the universe. Unto man is given the power to have dominion over the universe. That is beingness acting upon consciousness. It does not say that man becomes the owner of the universe. There is no way, shape, or form that man will ever become owner of the universe. He cannot say, I am God. But he can say that I am God realized. Now, being God realized, he does not need to advertise that. His very presence is luminous to radiate peace. a peace that passes understanding, a peace that heals the consciousness, because that's what you want to heal. Consciousness that is in a state of confusion, a state of restlessness, and peace entering consciousness from that pure being state subsides all internal strife. And you feel now you are in the presence of a being who is emanating peace. Now, one would have to arrive at this inner integration to feel it and recognize it. Then one knows without doubt that one is soul. And soul is that reflected aspect of the pure intelligence, that effulgent light that emanates through the body. Our origin is locked up in beingness, where we all came down from. And the highest state we can return on the conscious level is beingness acting on consciousness, because it must have consciousness to relate to. And if there is no consciousness to relate to, we can't understand beingness. We will dissolve into the beingness. And the basic fear of human mind is that if he finds God, he's going to lose himself in God. And he wants to hold on to his individuality. Isn't that why we are afraid to go look for God? Lest we find ourselves like a sugar cube dissolving in water. But what becomes of the water when the cube of sugar is dissolved into it? It gets sweet. When the consciousness of the individual is dissolved in the ocean of beingness, the consciousness of the individual becomes omnidirectional. That's why they call it cosmic consciousness or liberated. There is no loss of identity. It's the first time you have found your identity. It's the first time you have found your oneness. I and my Father are one. It's a state of being in which you live and function. You go into that state, you recognize it, you identify, and you come back down into the sensory level to live. And living in the sensory level, you have no desires. You function according to divine will. Now, the divine will is God's desire to be acted out by his creation. Creation must make the attempt to fulfill God's will. So Jesus is telling us, man ought to be perfect. Man ought to bring into manifestation the perfected will of God by the right attitude. Knowing your origin, it makes it easier to bring this about in your life. Not knowing your origin makes it difficult, because you don't know where you're going, you don't know why you're here, and you don't know what is happening to you. If you know where you're going, you know how you were constructed, then it becomes easy to live with the mistakes accumulated through the centuries of thinking, let alone the implications of your daily life. You'll begin to see now the value of unfoldment. You'll see the value of facing yourself. This leads to an involvement in life. You could not be involved in life and love it or understand it if you don't know your origin. But if you know your origin, you can accept your involvement. Jesus said, "Take my yoke upon thee, for it is light." He had to indicate at some point of his mission where we are, who we are, what we are, in order to be involved. So our true knowledge is necessary first as to our origin. We have to remove from the consciousness that we have a soul, that we are soul. And do not be afraid to admit it. The realized master only exists in the world primarily to refute the erroneous idea that man has a soul. He lives as an example of man being souled, total mastery of his origin. Now, living in the world is called the God in flesh, the incarnate of the divine being into matter. This is what the term Immanuel means. This is what the term Avatara in the Hindu scriptures means, the descent of the being or the spirit into the flesh, into the Godhead. This coming down from the pure state of being right down to matter acting on matter, the last level. This is also meaning he descended into hell and rose on the third day and ascended into heaven. The beingness of a realized man can go to the lowest level of matter acting on matter because he knows his soul and ascend right back to the source of pure being, all within the course of one lifetime. Soul is that reality in which we find ourselves involved with. We are the soul, we don't have a soul. I'll give an illustration. If you take flour, raisins, water, oil, and put it all together, and you put it in a baking pan, and you bake it, what would you call it after it's finished baking? Why don't you call it flour, raisin, water, cook? Huh? Why do you suddenly give it a name? The ingredients are there, but you don't call it that anymore, you suddenly give it a name. Man is soul, but the ingredients of his soul is a chemical body, an electrical or energy body, an idea or thought body, or a causal body. These are the ingredients of man that makes him up. And that composition is called soul. Man is this unique composition of a chemical structure of 16 basic elements and trace elements, an electrical composition of 19 elements, and an ideational or thought composition of 35 elements. In the whole matrix, he is classified by the creative intelligence as soul. So he doesn't have a soul. Now, what breaks down in man is the way he thinks. As a man thinketh, that is what he is. His thinking sets the degenerative action going by not knowing his origin, but not knowing his true nature. As long as he thinks he has a soul, he starts the degenerate action moving already. He starts the aging process to go. He starts every action to break down the chemical body. All the emotional output, all the disturbances start going out because not knowing the origin. Now, knowing the origin, you will start recycling, you start regenerating back. The whole process becomes back to its source. So the body does not break down, the mind does not go into frenzy or restless states, and the spiritual qualities remain in a high state of extrasensory attunement. Therefore, the whole unit now is a luminous mirror of the divine. Man is soul, see? Now, but he has to accept it. And that's very difficult after being told that you have a soul and you got to save it. And you have to save it from being put into some limbo. And as a kid, I used to say, why would the devil want to use my soul as charcoal for his oven? You see? He said he's going to send us into hell and the devil down there is going to poke us into an oven and burn us up. I couldn't figure out why he would use my soul as charcoal. But when you're a child, you think like a child. Until you mature in consciousness and realize what it's all about, involving the divine consciousness. The divine consciousness has placed within this very structure all the punishment, all the rewards, and the salvation. Not outside, it's inside. We reward ourselves, we punish ourselves, or we can liberate ourselves. We can break the bubble of delusion around us. We can break that tremendous thought that we have a soul and enter into soul freedom and know for without doubt that we are so. Jesus and all the great teachers of truth came as examples to show us how to break it. But until we know how we are constructed inside, we are not going to break it. It becomes very difficult. But once we know how we are constructed, it becomes easy to resolve the conflicts. First, we are matter acting on matter. That's the first level we're in. The second level is energy acting on matter. The third level is consciousness acting on matter. The fourth level is energy acting on energy. The fifth level is consciousness acting on energy. Up to that point, you're involved with time, space. You're involved with the Lord of creation. Not the Lord of intelligence, the Lord of creation, karma. Up to that point, there is karma. That means, as you do unto others, it's done back unto you. As you sow, that you reap. Consciousness acting on the energy rhythms. Beyond that state lies liberation. It's the next level up, which you call the teacher level, or the master level, or the intuitive level, or the Christ level. Consciousness acting on consciousness. There are no desires in that state. There is no time cycle in that state. It's all timeless. For the first time, you and the Father can have a face-to-face confrontation. For the first time, you can have an experience in beingness. In that level now, there is freedom. The shell is being broken. Consciousness acting on consciousness. So some people say, I hear the voice of God talking to me. I hear His consciousness permeating me. Therefore, I am moved by the Spirit. These are simple ways to indicate that divine consciousness working on your own consciousness, that intuitive nature acting on your nature. Some people say, when the telephone rings, I know who's on the phone. These are little smidgens of consciousness acting on consciousness. We can pick up messages from people at various distances. These are small representations of consciousness acting on consciousness. The full magnitude of consciousness acting on consciousness is the ability to materialize your thoughts at will. Think for one moment the magnitude of power involved in that statement. When you have entered the pure intuitive conscious level of consciousness acting on consciousness, that you are in possession of the power to crystallize thoughts at will. You see, if you don't have an ethical life, you can make a mess of creation. If you don't live an ethical system, what would happen? That having the power to crystallize thoughts, good or bad, would crystallize once you enter that state. Now, you could not enter that state if you were not ethical in the first place. It's not possible. To become Christ realized, where consciousness is acting on consciousness, the soul has shed the impurities out of the heart. The pure in heart sees God. At this level, purification of the heart is complete. You are free for the first time. The internal feelings of the heart are pure. There are no unethical feelings in there. It's magnifying itself now and glowing. It's becoming sacred. It's your inner sanctuary of your being. There in that state, you now possess this quality that someone has an urge or a craving, and your consciousness vibrates at their level of craving and crystallizes it for them. In that state, you don't have desires. In that state, you have the power to crystallize desires, not yours. The desires of those who are in need. Now, Jesus did not have a desire of his own to crystallize it. He didn't have to crystallize water into wine for his own needs. It was someone who needed it. He did not have to crystallize health for his own need. It was other people who had need of it. So in that state, when the soul has reached that level, There, you and the Father are one. You are in that particular level of beingness. You have this quality endowed in you, given to you. Now, the next level up is the ascension level. Beingness acting on consciousness. The luminous wisdom. There you see yourself, and you are on the right hand of God. Now we use the word right hand to symbolize beingness, left hand to symbolize consciousness. One is greater than the other in terms of experience. In that state, you have total awareness, not only in a chemical body, electrical body, ideational body, but in life and in death, you are totally free. There is no limitation to your journey home to the source. There is no level of creation to which you are subject to. You are free man, lord of yourself. You have to arrive at that state to be truly free man, lord of yourself, and it must occur while in a physical frame. God realization must be achieved while we're in the body, not outside of the body. But it's inside the body that gives magnitude to being outside of the body. It is that which makes it possible for us to glorify God outside in the impersonal nature and to recognize Him as the personal nature of man. So when you look at your fellow man, try to feel the Godness flowing through him on a personal level and feel the peace that they emanate. That little smidgen of peace that one can feel in another's presence is enough to transform consciousness. That's why Jesus said, if you cut out the tongues of men of peace, the very stones will shout peace. Knowing the origin of yourself as soul and knowing the qualifications of the soul radiating out as peace, that little peace that you would feel, that little contact is sufficient to make changes in your mechanism. It's sufficient to change other people's and affect them. The last being, beingness acting on beingness. This is the supreme creative intelligence, which we are all one. We came from that source, we're identified with it, and the peculiarity of that state sometimes is that you meet someone and you feel like you've known them all your life. We have a tendency to relate to that as karma or past life relationships, but don't get yourself too fooled with that. The reason why you feel this tremendous intimacy, where have you been all my life feeling, you have come from the source of being of pure love. We are all sprang forth from that oneness. This is greater in feeling once you realize its meaning, that the oneness of all things comes from the source of beingness. And when you feel that, then you really understand what Jesus meant. I, the Father, are one. The oneness of all things. Thank you.
Some of you are anxious to ask Adonis some questions that you might have. Who has the first one?
I understand what he's done. He can think of something and it will materialize. Does that mean that in this state we have reached consciousness? I think consciousness.
No, when you die and you understand that you can think of something and see it materialize in that state, that is a demonstration of consciousness acting on energy. You see, thoughts that we generate at that point can come to haunt us or lift us up. That is why they say benediction or holy unction at dying bed of the individual would help to raise the consciousness. The early priests did it but did not understand what they were doing. But they felt that if their mind could carry some impression
of some degree of love or holiness that will hold on to it while leaving the physical frame. The thought at death should be very pure to lift the consciousness up. Now, there are two things that occur when you leave the body of death. One, the Lord of creation is on your left side standing up, and the Master is on the right side standing up. That means consciousness is personified in the Lord of creation, and beingness is personified as the Master standing on the right side. Now, when you're ready to leave, the eyes are pulled up and goes out through the back in the medulla area. Now, the first person or the first expression or confrontation at death is the Lord of creation, which carries the accounting of your karma. You have to see the things you have done or abused the creative intelligence, the creative forces, how you used it, how you abused it, and have to account for it. Now, if you are not acquainted with any spiritual teaching during your lifetime, then you go immediately into the current of consciousness to pay for your deeds, as you sow that you reap. Then reincarnation is a natural law to compensate for the action of abuse of the life energy. Now, the creative intelligence is not going to interfere. The creative intelligence is a pure white light beaming down on you, but it has these two force fields flowing out as consciousness and beingness, and we as matter structure working it out. We leave and account for how we abuse the energy. Now, if we have some type of training and where we are aware of some being who gives us a model of how to behave, then that being comes over and assumes the responsibility of the karma. He doesn't take the karma, but he assumes the responsibility of measuring it out periodically to you in your incarnations, so that it doesn't break you up too soon and see that you go into that particular home or life pattern where it's easier to work it out than just to be thrown into a life form in which there is no compassion and it's very difficult to work it out. So, the master consciousness, if you trained in some religion, that consciousness of that being will be there. For a Buddhist, he will see Buddha. For a Christian, he will see Jesus. For a Hindu, he will see Krishna. That master form of God, or personalized aspect of God, assumes the karmic responsibility of the soul to work it out in a form that is more conducive, with too much overload. Therefore, the last thought is very important. Like the thief on the cross, he said, "Master, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom." Now, if we would have that particular thought image in our consciousness when we are ready to vacate this physical frame, then we will have the assurance of what the Master gave the thief. He said, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee, on this day you and I shall be in paradise." Paradise is not a place. Para is the Sanskrit word, means beyond. Dice means desire. You and I will be beyond desire levels. You and I will be beyond consciousness acting on energy. You and I will be in consciousness acting on consciousness. I will pull out your conscious soul force, pass through the various levels of creation, where you are subjected to time and space, and take you where I remain as a master consciousness in the divine state, consciousness acting on consciousness. Now we are free. We are granted salvation at death by grace. If we have this mental image in our consciousness after failing, there is no one who can say he has achieved yet until he has experienced that. And as long as he hasn't experienced it, it's wise to be humble and ask to be remembered during the process of transition. And then the master being, if you're a Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, whatever it is, that personalized aspect of God will pull you right away through to that conscious level where you are beyond the pull of desire.
You know, Donna, in the Catholic faith, what is the purpose? Is there then a very valuable service done when a priest is at the bedside of a dying?
Yes.
What is that ceremony?
That ceremony is Holy Unction.
What does it do?
It helps the individual to lift his consciousness in a forgiving state and achieve the benediction of grace that the personalized aspect of his belief would assume now a tangible sponsorship of his soul. In other words, let's say you don't have no credit at the bank and you want to open credit. You will be required to have what? Collateral or sponsor. Isn't that true? Now, if you don't have collateral, then you have to have a sponsor. The sponsor will have to guarantee the bank that you will make payments, or he will put up the money and make the notes easier for you to make the payments based upon your income. Equally true, this particular experience at death is to involve you and the personalized aspect of God that has embodied itself on the earth as a sponsorship of your divine credit in the bank of life, so that you will handle your credit again to work it out in lesser aspects of turmoil, lesser aspects of tension, or breaking the body of teaching. This is our way of working it out. Now, you are liberated by grace. And for that, if you can remember by asking to be remembered. Now, if we ask for remembrance, then we are asking for grace. And through this particular attitude, we can be lifted up beyond the pull of our desires. The only reason you can reincarnate, or that you do reincarnate, is the unfulfilled desire. Now, if you don't have no desires, and you're pulled beyond that level of creation by the sponsorship of a master's consciousness, then you are free. You are liberated of death. And there will be a change in your physical mechanism. Many people who have died with a horror on their face, and many have died with a glow on their face. This is what we're talking about, occurring inwardly inside. Now, there was a friend of mine, he was an initiate, his father died. And before he died, he asked me to come and see the father, but I couldn't make it in time. So I said to him, I'll see your father before he goes. Well, he thought, literally, I'd get to the hospital to see the father. That day I meditated, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then the phone came, and it rang, and it told me the father had passed on. And I'm sorry, he didn't get to the hospital. I said, are you sure? He says, well, no, I'm not sure. He says, a strange thing had happened just before father died. I said, can you describe it? He said, yes. He was in a coma all through the day. And just about 1:45, he opened his eyes and he looked in the room and he looked at me, this is his son, and all of a sudden his face went into a horror. And he said, at that moment, I felt your presence. And then he said, my father's face changed. And there was a glow and a smile on his face. And then, as he smiled, he looked at me, reached out, touched my hand, and passed on. I said, now you understand what I said. I will see your father before he leaves. I did not say I will be present physically at your father's death in the hospital. The divine consciousness can reach out and lift the soul past that point in that experience. Now, the man, when he passed out of the body, his face had a beautiful smile. The next day, I was present to perform part of the ceremony with another minister. And those who were able to see in the room saw the father standing at the head of the coffin. And these were people who had no psychic ideas or beliefs. They were good, old-fashioned churchgoers from the Catholic environment. Yet they did have wonderful experiences in that little chapel. Now, what I'm trying to point out is one can help another individual in the last moments of death to raise the consciousness to a higher level by thinking of some individual who can lift them up or to send them the thought of love that they are being lifted up. In the boy's mind, he is constantly praying that the love of Christ will lift his father up. And he was lifted up. So, it is possible that at death this happens. And it's very important that at those moments, so even you know someone is passing on, and you want to help them, and there is no priest around who you can turn to, then as an individual, you can repeat in their right ear, "The Christ in me, love the Christ in me," and they will be lifted up. You see, this is a way of sponsoring them. Your Christ consciousness sponsors them in that way. We can be an asset to them passing over. Yes.
The origin of how we got separated to begin with. Could you help me with that a little bit?
The origin of how we got separated to begin with. The creative intelligence of pure being craved out of his love nature to form a creation. Remember, he craves that his desire is divine principle too. Don't look at desire as something bad. We would not inherit or have desire in our nature if it was not part of the creative structure, the desire. The creative structure, the creative principle, desires creation, desires a crystallization of love. Love pure is total light. Now, it has to have a form to interact on. And that form must come up from craving. So craving, in its purest state, is God's perfect will. His perfect will is to manifest the creation whereby the creation would adhere to perfect will. And adhering to perfect will would live according to perfect law of existence. Now, the first indication of pure divine will is beingness. But because the creative intelligence could not leave us in that state of pure beingness without testing his creation, he endowed us with choice, or I amness. This is the next level down, beingness acting on consciousness. We are all from the ocean of pure beingness acting on beingness. Now, for us to step out of this ocean of beingness, we have to step out into beingness acting on consciousness. You see, consciousness is a different state. And consciousness is where choice is made. Choice is not made in beingness. You have to make it out from your consciousness.
Well, I thought at this higher level that our desires were under God's desires.
Yes, it's God's desire, but at the same time, it's freedom to choose, to adhere to divine will. He has to test you at that point if you will adhere to divine will. He has a desire for you to be perfect, to remain perfect, a pure being. He's giving you a choice in the form of consciousness. Now, he's telling you, obey my will. Do my will. Now, if you don't do the will, the only sin we have is disobedience. We don't have any other sin. Disobedience is the non-application of divine law. When we apply divine law, we have perfect obedience. We obey the law. We are in tune with the Father all the time. We are perfect beings. When we disobey, we are imperfect beings. Then we are tainted with consciousness. We are tainted with the wrong use of choice in our consciousness.
Well, then during a lifetime you go through many of the different levels day by day. Is that true? And so Christ, when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane,
he had
a choice.
Yes.
He was not predestined, in other words, to go through this particular event because his life led up to this.
Predestined and God's will act as one. Choice and permissive will is the determining factor of adherence. God is already predestining his creation. Let me show you what I mean. This building has to be pre-wired before the electrical company will allow the energy to flow through it.
creation is preset by the Creator before he can allow his life power to flow through it as an actual thing. Now, you are permitted to pull the main switch and shut off all the power and spoil all the food in the refrigerator, or go and turn off the wall switch and all the lights that are needed to be closed down. This is a choice you have. But you don't have a choice in determining the wiring. This has to be set up in order for the power to come in. Now, it's the same is true of us. The karmic tendencies, we generated them, and the responsibilities that incurred must be faced by us. Now, we have the choice to avoid or face up to them. And that's what tonight's lecture means, involvement. How we come to be involved and to face them. Until we can face it, that we are never free from it. How we drop out is a divergence from the divine will by a wrong use of our permissive will, our choice will. Now, that is not something we are condemned for. It is not something that we are damned into infinity for. Because we abuse the use of it, that doesn't say the Creator would destroy us. If you have a child, and you tell a child, don't go in that room because you have a bunch of objects on the floor that you're painting, and you may spoil it, and you may not be able to find it, the child comes in the room and everything is cleared up. You may attack the child and kill the child. You may admonish the child, but you're not going to kill the child. And you'll start all over telling the child to pick it up and put it back in place. Equally true, we are permitted to act in the creative force field, but we're not damned to be destroyed because of our ignorance. We can regain our way back through the right choice, just as much as we pulled ourselves away by the wrong choice. It's the choice that will be the thing. Now, the choice is determined by I am. Every time you say I am, you are triggering choice. You see? Otherwise, there would be no need for it. I am is consciousness, not being. I am a microphone. I am a recorder. I am a podium. I am a Dan O'Leary, or I am a Jack Smith. I am, I am, I am. Popeye the Sailor Man too. But this is the I am-ness that is constantly creating and separating us from the creative intelligence. It's generating all the I am-ness in it to separate us. Once we recognize that, when we turn our face back to the source, we will not come away from the source if it was not designed that way. You see, God has a purpose behind it. The creative intelligence, real purpose for our existence, is to follow divine law through obedience. Now, let's say for one moment we had obeyed. Then we would all be in a state of pure love. We would not suffer the four deaths or the four births. But we disobeyed, so we have to suffer them.
One last question.
Different things raise you in consciousness so you can go through these levels. Meditation is one. What about something you're more familiar with? What is communion? How does that raise you? Where does communion come in?
Different things raise you in different levels of consciousness, meditation, and so forth. It is true. And where does communion fit in? Communion is that particular level of awareness in which you are involved with the Christ intelligence, consciousness acting on consciousness. Now, of all the ceremonies in the church, communion is the most significant because it has the vibratory force brought down by angelic beings present there, and those who can see it will see it personalizing itself into the chalice, into the wafer, and into the wine. Now, a highly evolved individual partaking in that
ritual or ceremony or that initiation, which it is really, will actually taste the wine as blood and taste the wafer as flesh. Symbolically, and indicated by Jesus, but the actual priest relationship will be there for a fully evolved individual, for experience. Now, the wafer represents the unity of matter. The wine represents the flow of the vitality of the spirit or energy into matter. And when these two things fuse as one, we have beingness acting on consciousness again. That's why he says, do these things in remembrance of me. Every time you look upon the experience and see matter and energy fusing itself, you will have an integration with the Christ spirit. Now, this brings you up to beingness acting on consciousness, which is essential. You must achieve ascension. You see, the Holy Communion is given before the crucifixion. It was given as a preparation for resurrection leading to ascension. And the individual is reminded that this is a bond that he has to adhere to. This is an initiation into another level of consciousness, of being as acting in consciousness. So once you experience it, even though you do it in a ritual way without any true understanding, there is that bond occurring in you, and it's lifting you up. Now, at the deathbed, they do give Holy Communion to the dying individual as to ensure that bond between the soul and the master consciousness, that the master consciousness will pull it out of the levels of desire into that state of desirelessness in order to achieve resurrection and enter ascension. You see, we not only must resurrect, but we must ascend. To him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time, but I will make him a pillar in the house of my Lord. That is a permanent fixture in creation. And a permanent fixture in creation is beingness. You have to be some being in creation permanently established at that level. So communion is that locking in to lift you out of the desired levels, which involve time and space, which is consciousness acting on energy. It pulls you up via the Christ awareness, which is consciousness acting on consciousness, in remembrance of it, into beingness acting on consciousness, which is a permanency of your being. So we have what is called a tremendous gift of God via the communion, in which man can be lifted up by God's grace, not by God's compassion. By God's compassion is not what we want. We want His grace, to be lifted by His grace via these levels. By ourselves we cannot make it. It's difficult for us to make it. There is too much pain and agony. Yet, by the grace impinging upon us, by the Christ intelligence, we are pulled through from consciousness acting on energy, which is the highest level of human desire mechanism, into the Christ state, which is consciousness acting on consciousness, where there is no desire within the human mechanism, into the beingness acting on consciousness, which is the ascended state, which is the completion of the being. Now, we can have bodily assumption, not necessarily physical ascension after resurrection. Bodily assumption can occur where the body is actually ascended without going through the throes of death, as in the case of Mary. And there are Enoch and various different great men and women in past times. And today, in their various religious life, they can be that particular experience of bodily assumption. And it does occur. But the Holy Communion is that bond that takes us from the desire state to the desireless state to the established permanent state.
That's why we are asked to do it in remembrance of the Christ, not in remembrance of Jesus. If it was in remembrance of Jesus, it's a different thing. We are asked to do this particular involvement in the remembrance of the Christ's intelligence. Because he says, this is my body, this is my spirit, or blood. The Christ's intelligence is involved in matter, and it's involved in energy. And once it's involved in matter and energy, it's involved with desirelessness. So there can be no desire in that state.
Well, even those religions, per se, like Hindu or Buddhist, who don't have a communion of bread and wine,
they have a communion, this is called a prasad. They have a communion with those that the communion is a new invention. It's not. It just showed up that Jesus used water or used wine and bread to indicate the ritual. The ritual is known in the East as a consecrated food to God. This is my body, this nourishes me, O man. I am the Creator, the divine intelligence, the desirelessness. I absorb you back into me, free from all desires, state of free. Therefore, eat prasada, eat the divine food of light, and be absolved and be elevated. This is not a new idea. Jesus just brought the idea and put it in a different context of utilizing bread and wine and trying to intimate that the Christ of intelligence is the point. Krishna consciousness means the same thing. It's known in the East as prasadam or artila, the food that we eat, the best food. And everything there is consecrated. Now, a true mystic, if he doesn't eat food, the only thing that will go down his stomach or stay down in his stomach is consecrated food. That is the holy communion of prasadam. Once it's blessed in that state, he can absorb it and stay down in his intestinal tract. If it's not, it will come up back. As in the case of the Catholic stigmatist, Teresa Newman, she did not live on food for quite a long time. Yet, the only food that was stayed up in her stomach was the daily communion that she took, the wafer and the wine. Now, in the East, we have the same thing. There are mystics, they only just cannot eat anything, or will not eat anything. But when they're given prasadam, it stays there. Any other substance will come up. It has nothing to do with the religious names, it has to do with the principle behind it. So the holy communion of prasadam is that level that raises your consciousness from desire to desirelessness, to willingness or permanency. And this is the purpose of prasad or holy communion, that one will have this consecrated food. It's God's love passing through. And it's tremendous if you ever encounter it. Some people are healed by it. Or some people are healed by taking it for the community. It's that bond.
Donna? We're great. Tonight at 8 o'clock.